great series so far. Russell's on step four tonight, so I just want to introduce Russell.
Yeah, if you would. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Oh, boy. Good evening, everybody. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's great to be here. I've had the privilege of not only coming up here with you guys, but I think a few years ago I did the steps up here. I really enjoyed this group. It's got a lot of enthusiasm, and this is a good thing for me to be at an AA meeting. And, you know, I think I probably I benefit a lot. You benefit a lot from service and from trying to be transparent. Being transparent is an important deal. And I guess that's really all you need to do in order to, I guess I, maybe that's what qualifies as a good AA talk. Maybe that's what's the magic, maybe that's the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous, authenticity, being the genuine article, you know. You know, I think maybe that's the amazing thing. We're you know, alcoholics are natural cynics. Not even skeptics, you know, skeptics. I think I read the definition of that last night. You know, skeptics, you know, I don't know, you know. Cynics are like, it's all bullshit, you know what I mean? They're in the back of the room, they're saying, I don't know what this guy's going to say, but it's bullshit, you know what I mean? I don't know, it's too good to be true, you know. You never hear, you never see alcoholics say it's too bad to be true. You know, alcoholics say things like, oh, that's bad, must be true, you know. We're cynics. We don't believe anything, you know. And the bottom line is that... we don't believe anything. We don't want to believe anything. You know, when you're at an AA meeting, you already start out with 20% of the group saying, "I don't even want to be here. This is a bunch of crap. They should be listening to me." You know, and I'm saying 20. That's probably low. And I think what really maybe gets people in Alcoholics Anonymous, it says our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, is that somehow, some way, from the podium. I think we're given the great gift also, alcoholics are given the great gift of recognizing phonies. Hey, takes one to know one, right? You know, when you've been a phony baloney all your life, when you've been full of crap all your life, you just recognize people that are full of crap, selling your story. So I think that alcoholics, one of the refreshing things, one of the elixirs, the magical elixirs we have in here, is that when we sit down and we recognize somebody's telling us something from their heart and they're being honest with us. And being transparent, you know, and it's hard for alcoholics to be transparent when your whole life, you know, is, well, first of all, it's hard being transparent when you have no clue as to what's really going on. You don't have a clue as to what's going on. For so many reasons, you don't have a clue. You're so confused when you come in here. And it's funny, what an interesting thing, you know, to be an alcoholic. You know, before we get here, they say our alcoholic life seems the only normal one. Our alcoholic life seems the only... What does that mean? That means our alcoholic thinking seems the only normal one. You know, one thing interesting about alcoholics thinking, at least when I talk about alcoholic thinking, you got to understand I'm talking about my thinking. I'm not necessarily talking about your thinking, although I've learned some secrets in AA in the last 31 years. You know, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous thinking I was unique, that I was different, you know? You know, people who are unique and different say things like, yes, but, if only, you don't understand, and things like that, because I was so different than you. You know, I mean, that may be good for you, but I think if you understood my divorce, I think if you understood my life, I think if you understood all the nuances and the fine, you know, pieces that are sort of missing, and how I'd start off to try to make things right and perfect, and I'd always be screwed up, and if you really understood every molecule of my life and what happened to me, you'd understand that, you know, I don't have a drinking problem. I drink because I have problems. And I know it looks like I have a drinking problem, but I just drink because I have problems. And pretty soon my problems would go away. And if I had a lot of money, if I had a lot of this, I wouldn't have these problems. Then, as a matter of fact, my drinking perfectly matches my problems. I drink exactly the amount I need to drink in order to match my problems. So I appreciate your thoughts on the subject, but why don't you go screw yourself, you know? And you know, so I kill people with the pieces they were missing. Because certainly everybody was always missing pieces of me. Because how could you know me unless you were inside my skin? You don't know me. You know, and so I could remain. No, I didn't think of it this way. I could remain as sick as I wanted to remain just by shutting you out and saying you can possibly know me. Because I'm unique. I'm different. And now I'm 31 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've come to the realization completely opposite of what I was so sure of. I was so... Man, I'll tell you something. There's one thing about alcoholics before they come in here. They're so smart. They're so smart. And they're so sure. They're so absolutely sure they're right. As their life is going down the tubes, as the entire world, as they're going to jail, as they're losing their kids, as they're broke, bankrupt, feeling sorry for themselves, as nothing's working, the bottom line is, the one thing they know is they're right and you're wrong. And you ain't going to convince them otherwise. And now here I am 31 years later, and I understand that not only am I not unique, but that in AA, my theory is, and I've been operating under this theory for a long time, it seems to be working out, that we're all twins. That we're all like exactly alike. Oh, there's a little difference here and there, you know, and that kind of thing, but we're all exactly alike, which is kind of interesting. It means if I have a thought, no matter how incredibly screwy it is, and how much I don't want to share it, and how embarrassing it is, it means everyone in you had the same thought. And so you can go to a meeting, and if you understand yourself, if you can see what's going on inside of you, which I couldn't see for years, you automatically are able, if you understand this, to have x-ray vision into everybody else's brain. And so you can talk from the podium because you know about yourself. You're clear. You're not spiritually blind. You see, when you're spiritually blind, you fall into all sorts of spiritual potholes, because even though the world has physical laws, the world also has spiritual laws. We don't see the spiritual laws. We just see the effects of spiritual laws. The effects are being, you know, feeling self-pity, the effects of divorces, the effects of hurt relationships, all the things that happen to us, the terrible things that we do to people, we see that. And what happens with the spiritual laws is when you violate the spiritual laws, you fall into these spiritual potholes. Because you don't see them. You just, and it's like, how did that happen? It's like everything's like an accident. You're like living life on automatic pilot, and you're doing everything you're doing you think is absolutely... Listen, I was my greatest fan. No, I was. Nobody loves me like I love me. I mean, I know I hate myself too. I know it's that alky love, you know. You love yourself, and in the shower you're saying, I'm such an asshole, you know. And I mean, you love you. What's with the... I know, you know, on one hand... On one hand, you love yourself, you're the greatest in the world. On the other hand, you're a piece of shit, you deserve to die. I understand that little friction, you know what I mean? You know, when you have that friction, you know, you think you should die, you don't deserve to live, you're a piece of crap, but on the other hand, you're the greatest thing in the world. Set some sort of friction, and scotch will actually help that deal out, and sort of puts it all together, you know, and it worked for a little while. So when you start seeing, but when you start seeing yourself, you know, what happens is you start seeing the way life works, you start understanding why and how and all that sort of stuff, and you just don't fall into these potholes anymore. You know, what's even, and so you talk at meetings and you're transparent, then people come up to you and you say, you're talking about me. And, you know, I said, yeah, of course the whole meeting was about you, Tom. You know, yeah, I said, no, I'm talking about me. It's just you think I'm talking about you because I know you, because I know me. And so you sponsor people and they come up to you and they say things like, they tell you stuff. You know, alkies say stuff. They say stuff, they make up stories. They make up stories. The stories aren't true, but they think it's true. They operate on life based upon a story that they think is true, which is totally false. But it's like they wrote a script, you know what I mean? This is why I got divorced, this is what my ex-wife was like, this is why they fired me, this is why, and they got the whole script. They'll talk about it for an hour and a half, and they believe it, and they'll fight for it. You know, nobody else believes it. Nobody in AA believes it. Nobody in the courtroom believes it. The judge doesn't believe it. You know, they come to me. They say, we got to sue those cops. You know, they lied. They arrested me, and blah blah blah. And this is the reason why. And they tell me the story. And they're very animated when they tell me the story about why the cops arrested me and why they did this and why they did that. And I'm listening to the story. And, you know, I'm sort of been around for 31 years, so I'm kind of transparent. I'm sort of using my X-ray vision, look through him. And he finishes telling my story, and I said, well, that's a good story. You know, I have a sign on my desk that says, the truth, you can't handle the truth. You know what I mean? Truth will set you free. First of all, it'll piss you off, you know? It's a scary thing when you ultimately realize that you really have no idea what's going on planet Earth. You know, it's a scary thing when you're 40, 50 years old and you realize you're marrying people and you're contracting with things and you're walking around the planet doing stuff and you don't have a flipping clue as to anything that's really going on. And so they tell me this story and I say to him something like this. I said, well, that's a good story. He says, so I'm not guilty. So I say, well, that's a great story. Did you tell that story to the cops? He says, yes, I did. He says, what did they do? They arrested me. I said, you know why they did that? He says, no, why? He says, because they didn't believe you. And the judge isn't going to believe you either. And the jury isn't either. And you know something? I don't believe it either. You see, the problem is that story only works. That story actually only works on the planet Mars. So the first thing I got to do is I got to get you back on the planet Earth. Because if you tell that story in court, they're not going to put you in jail. They're going to actually put you under the jail. You know, because, you know, I'm not going to tell you how to do the fourth step. This is going to be a little bit about the fourth step. I want to try to give you something different. That's what I want. You know, I used to do, this is how you do the fourth step. I'm not going to tell you how to do the fourth step. You should read the book. You really need to read the book. It has a chart in there and everything, four lists and all that stuff. I'm not here to take you through this. I want to give you a little inspiration, inspire a little as to why you should want to do the fourth step. Because this is my theory on alcoholics. If alcoholics are excited about something, you know, it says if they want what I have, if they want what you have, they're going to see, I have no idea how to do it, but I'm going to do that. You know, if it gets me to that deal, I'm doing that. You'll figure out how to do it. And if you don't want what this fourth step will give you, I could draw you a map. It ain't going to happen. You're going to be saying things like, I'm working on it, which is alcohol code for leave me the flip alone. You know what I mean? I ain't never going to do it. You know? So it's about clearing up everything so that you can see things clearly. And when you see things clearly, all sorts of remarkable things happen. So I don't know whether I did it here, but I'm going to do it again. If you heard this story, don't say it to your neighbor. You'll just ruin it. So you guys heard about the... you've heard about the $10 cruise to the Bahamas, right? Some of you have heard about that. You know, so a guy's walking along the street and he says, and he sees a sign above this store. It says, cruises to the Bahamas, $10. You know, it's a pretty good deal, you know. Round, you know, cruise to the Bahamas. So he walks in and he says, you know, there's a sign above your door that says, cruise to the Bahamas, $10. He says, yeah. I says, yeah. He says, $10, cruise to the Bahamas. He says, yeah, that's what it says. He says, is it like a real cruise to the Bahamas, $10? He says, absolutely. $10, no extra, that's it? $10 flat, no tax, $10. He says, wait a second, you're telling me I can get a cruise to the Bahamas for $10? He says, absolutely. There's no cash, no, that's it. He says, $10. He says, $10? He says, $10. He says, let me tell you something. We got a cruise living right now. You got the $10. You're on the cruise. You got $10? He says, I got $10. He hands the guy the $10, and before he knows it, he gets hit upside the head, and he goes unconscious. Hey, listen, this is the deal. So he wakes up about 5, 6, 7 hours later, whatever it is, and he's floating in an inner tube in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. No land in sight. And the sun is going down in the horizon, and he's floating sort of gingerly along, sort of like, I guess in a, you would call an easterly direction towards the Bahamas, in the middle of the Gulf Stream, in the middle of the Atlantic. And he's like saying, I can't believe this is happening to me, all alone out there. And all of a sudden, about 100 yards away, a little farther, a little closer to, I guess, Nassau, whatever, although there's no land, he sees another guy in an inner tube with a baseball cap on. So he quickly, you know, swims over and paddles over to the other guy. And he says, same inner tube, you know, whatever it is, you know, the SS Marlin or whatever it is. He says, do you believe this? He says, I go in this place, $10, cruise to the Bahamas. I give him the $10, I'm knocked upside the head. Next thing I know, we're in the middle, we're going to die out. You believe this? And the guy says, hey, you're telling me. You're telling me. Look at me. This has got to be criminal. This is illegal. We're going to die out here. We're going to die. This is illegal. This is criminal. They can't be allowed to get away. He says, hey, you're telling me. He says, how could this happen? I can't even believe that they can get away with this. He says, hey, listen, buddy, you're telling me. So now they're both sort of floating along towards the Bahamas. And finally, the guy says to the guy with the baseball cap, he says, so you think they feed us on this cruise? And the guy in baseball cap turns, he says, I don't know, they didn't last year. It's funny, isn't it? Funny. Everybody laughs at that. It's funny. You know, it's funny. You know, I think I just tried to really funny because it's because how can you be so stupid? How can you be so unbelievably stupid to screw up the same way again? You know, do the same thing the same way and screw up again. It's so stupid. It's so stupid. It's funny. You ever been in an AA meeting when people are telling their stories and people laugh? They laugh because it's about the baseball cap. Because it's so stupid. And they laugh because they say things in their mind like, I did that. They laugh because it's so unbelievably idiotic and stupid. And they laugh, they say, that's what I did. That's how I thought. And they laugh at a life built on lies that was absolutely insane and stupid. And the reason we can laugh about it is because they're not living that way anymore. But maybe we forgot, or maybe we don't really understand the fact that there was a time for each of us when not only we were the guys in the baseball caps, but we thought we were right. We thought we were right. It wasn't so funny then. Now I'm going to tell you something else that isn't so funny. You know, there's a lot of people that drink again in Alcoholics Anonymous. There are a lot of people unhappy in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, if you look around the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a lot of guys in inner tubes with baseball caps. You know, it's possible not to drink and be walking around here in a baseball cap saying they didn't last year. They didn't last year. It's possible not to get physically sober and not understand or see a thing. And when you don't understand or see a thing, you find yourself in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean wondering whether they're going to feed you on the cruise and trying to figure out how you got in this situation, how you got in this marriage in the first place, how you got in this job in the first place, how you got in this bind with the money in the first place. You start getting into that deal. Why is this happening to you again? And somewhere along the line, maybe 10 or 20 years, you're saying things like, hanging in there, you know? And you're not happy with your sobriety, and you don't understand why. You don't have a clue. You may even be going to a lot of meetings, and the meetings aren't even working. You know, it says here in one of the lines, it says here in the 12 and 12, it says, the most common symptoms of emotional insecurity are worry, anger, self-pity, and depression. You usually find that, you know where you find that? In Alcoholics Anonymous. With alcoholics. I sponsor a lot of guys, you know. They come in, like, they tell me stories. You know, they talk, why would anybody talk, really, seriously, can you think about it? Why would anybody talk to me? I mean, I'd be the wrong guy to talk to. But these guys are so desperate. They're so desperate. They're so worried. They're so angry. They're so... that they will do something crazy like talk to me, you know? Because I may seem like a nice guy here, you know what I mean? But it doesn't work like that in my office, you know? And they come in and they tell me this story. They tell me a story, just like the people tell me stories, you know, when they're being arrested. And the stories are all like the stories I used to tell. And they think they're victims of bad breaks and misunderstandings. They may have 10 or 20 years. They're victims of alcoholism, and they don't even know they have it because their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. Because self-pity, because every thought they have that's disastrous that leads them to horrible situations. Every feeling they have that they go with and they buy into. Every, you know, they can't do that to me, or why is this happening to me, or how about this, I got a great idea. You know, what it says? It says the grouch and the brainstorm. You know? You know what that means? That means the brainstorm. You know, alcoholics have incredibly, unbelievably great ideas about their lives. They call them brainstorms. You know what I mean? No use checking with a sponsor or even having a sponsor. Why check with a sponsor when you're brilliant? You know what I mean? And you're right. And you see, if you're an alcoholic, your alcoholic life seems the only normal one. It's like being right-handed. So no matter how crazy, no matter how much it's sort of insane to think that you're going to get a $10 cruise, you just somehow think, you know, this is like, I just stumbled upon the, it's the right thing to do. You see, the drinking is really a symptom of the disease. It's really a symptom. The disease centers in our mind, not our body. It has the disease centers in the way we think. And here's the bad news. Even after you stop drinking, you don't stop thinking. Get this. The thinking speeds up. It's true. No. It's true. That's why they always talk about the committee. That's why they come in here going crazy. That's why they need a meeting. Like they needed a drink. I need a meeting. Why? Why? I don't. And they'll tell you why, but they don't really know why. They need a meeting. You need a meeting because of your brain. See, I've done a study on this, and I believe that if I sponsored you, and you like needed a meeting, you had a lot of problems, like a lot of this emotional stuff, and if I actually could surgically remove your brain, let's say replace it with like a monkey brain or something. I believe that, I'm serious, I believe that this would solve your problem. As a matter of fact, I believe your problem would be solved if I removed your brain and didn't replace it with anything at all. I don't think you drink. I don't even think you'd be nervous. You know, I think it has to do with your thinking. You know, I used to tell my sponsor how upset I was about something, and I'd tell him about something that's obviously I should be upset about, and he would say things to me like this. He'd say, well, let me ask you something. If you weren't upset about that, how would you feel? And I'd say, what do you mean? I'd say, well, if you weren't upset about that, how would you feel? What are you talking about? You see, that's the problem here. We're brilliant, and sponsors, old-timers, are stupid. How are you going to get anywhere dealing with stupid people asking stupid questions? But, you know, you got to play along with them because you don't want to drink. And, you know, so I say, what do you mean? He says, well, if it didn't bother you, how would you feel? I said, what do you mean if it didn't bother me? He says, yeah, if it didn't bother you, how would it feel? You mean if my wife cheating on me, the guy bouncing the check, you know, the cops, if it didn't bother me, how would I feel? Is that what you mean? He says, yeah, if it didn't bother you, how would I feel? You feel? He says, well, if it didn't bother me, I'd feel fine. He'd say, there you go. How can you deal with crap like this? You know what I mean? So what do you want? You see, but I'm right and he's wrong, but you got to determine, do you want to be right or would you rather be happy? You want to be right and miserable and feeling sorry for yourself and be a thumb-sucking crybaby and get into all sorts of trouble and hurt people because you're mad because they hurt your feelings and they shouldn't have done that to me? Or would you rather be happy and feeling great about yourself? It's like a decision, right? You got to make. It's a very difficult decision to make, you know. Well, from where I'm at right now, after 31 years in doing this, I think the decision is clear. But to alcoholics, it's not so clear. Believe me, it's a very difficult decision. It's like you're giving up something like your ego. It's like you're giving your right to be happy, your right to be mad. You know what I mean? It's like you're giving up something. You know? And that's where the disease really lies. That's where the disease lies. That's where, you want to know where the disease lives? It really starts, it gets crazier when you stop drinking. Wow. Hey, men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, irritable, and discontent unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. They drink because they're unhappy and they're crazy, because they can't handle sobriety, because their thinking is sick thinking about themselves and other people, which they do naturally, because their alcoholic thinking, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one, and they don't even know. Here's the crazy thing. Not only is it normal and it's comfortable, they don't even think it's crazy because that's just the way they are. You know, they don't think it's crazy to be lusting after women, to be lusting and craving men, to be lusting and craving sex all the time. They don't think it's crazy. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you what, if you tell them they got a problem, they think you're stupid. It's just like with the booze. It's the same thing with the booze. They don't think it's crazy to lust and crave money all the time and center your life around money and worry about a job and lust and crave about a job and lust and crave about all the material things we lust and crave. It doesn't matter that you point out to them that their entire life has gone down the shit tubes because all they're doing is chasing after that stuff, and that A is not about that stuff, that puff. A is not about that deal. It doesn't matter that it says in the, you know, they say it as good as you can. It says certainly no alcoholic and certainly no member of AA wants to deprecate material achievement. Nor do we enter into a debate with many who still so passionately cling to the belief that to satisfy our basic desires is the main object of life. Our basic desires, our basic cravings. But we are sure that no class of people in the world ever made a worse mess of trying to live by this formula. This formula. This is the formula which we live on. Than alcoholics. For thousands of years, we have been demanding more than our share of security, prestige, and romance. That's right, girls. Romance. You mean to tell me that movie Pretty Woman, when Richard Gere, you know, picks up the prostitute, you know, Julia, and such a cute movie and such a good movie, you mean to tell me that's a problem for me? You know, if I was to say that was a problem, most of the world would laugh at it. It's a problem. You guys think that shit is true. Well, you'd like to think it's true. It's nice, isn't it? You're chasing after that stuff. You've been chasing after that stuff all your life. How's that working out for you? How's the pretty woman working out for you? And then you come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and it says, God is the centerpiece of our life. We put away all that stuff. He's the centerpiece of our life. They read the Bible before they came in. They read the Sermon on the Mount. It was the whole thing. The Sermon on the Mount. It's all about turning away from material things. Don't worry about material things. God will give you, you know, they said things, seek ye first the kingdom of God and all his righteousness, and everything will be given to you that you require, which in AA parlance was turned into, you know, first worry about, you know, what is it in Visions for You? Your relationship with God. That's what it says at the end of Vision for You. Read Vision for You. You know, be concerned about your relationship with God, and you'll get everything you need. It's all about God throughout the entire thing. But you come in here with alcoholics who not only crave alcohol and not only believe alcohol. So okay, you put away the alcohol, but now they're craving the yachts, the cars, the women, the men, the sex, the everything else that the world says. The world says that this is the answer to our problem. And you come in here and you try to talk about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is completely antithetical to that. Throw away all that. It's all about service to others, love of others, and faith in God. And you try to do that, and you're going to get the same reaction with alcoholics as when you first told them you have a drinking problem. They're going to say something like, why don't you go screw yourself? Sober in AA. As you're telling them the truth. So let me ask you something. How many years did you guys drink before you figured out that you might have a drinking problem? How many people did you hurt before you figured out that alcohol had something to do with your divorce, something to do with your firing, that it wasn't everybody's fault, that maybe there is something screwed up with you, that maybe you have a problem? What, did you have like just a bad weekend, you know, the first time you tried drinking, you said, oh, I'm an alcoholic, I mean, obviously it's me? Or did you go through years and years and years of getting arrested for DUI, getting fired, going through divorces, yelling and screaming, all sorts of bad things happen to you, when finally, at your worst, you had to admit, you know, maybe you might have a drinking problem. And then they sent you to this room where they tell you stupid things like, stay away from bars, you know what I mean? Well, that's where all my best friends are, you know what I mean? and crazy stuff like that. You even fought that, right? How many? And this is, you had maybe you graduated high school, law school, you had a degree, you were brilliant, and it took you years to figure out the booze thing. And the booze thing is like obvious. As a matter of fact, I'll bet before you even get in here, there were people that perhaps your mother, your father, sister would talk to you about your alcohol consumption, right? How'd you like those people? Did you say, oh, thank you very much for sharing that with me? I appreciate your coming up to me and just sort of telling me what you think about my drinking and what you think about my life. And, you know, I hadn't been thinking about that, but now you told me that maybe I drink too much. I really need to look at that. You know what I mean? What can I do to help you out and to show you how grateful I am about what you told me? Or did you cross them all your lift and say, that guy's an idiot, and rip their hearts out and hurt their feelings? You know, because you thought you were right, right? Because you thought you were right. So now you're an Alcoholics Anonymous, and now you're brilliant. Now you've been given the revelation after 2 billion meetings and after a sponsor and after reading the big book about, now you've been given the revelation that you're powerless over alcohol and that your life had become unmanageable, and you're going, and thank God that alcoholism thing is over. And that's not even the alcoholism thing. That's just the symptom of the alcoholism thing. The alcoholism thing is every other thought you have in your mind after the booze leaves. That's why it says, unless we get rid of our old ideas, the result is nil until we let go absolutely. So if it took you 10, 15, 20 years, 3 years, 5 years to even come to the realization that you might have, or even see that you might have a problem with alcoholism, with drinking, so how long do you think it takes to realize you have a problem with the way you spend money? When people are spending money just like you are outside there, charging up stuff on credit cards that they can't, spending money on money they don't have, on things they don't need to impress people they don't like. How long do you think it takes an alcoholic and then come to meetings and complain about how you got money problems? And so you're upset and concerned because you're broke. And how long do you think it takes, you know, before you come to realization you got a problem with sex? You got a problem with lust, you got a problem with women, you got a problem with men, you got a problem with relationship, you got a problem with every other thought. How long do you think it comes until you come to the realization that every thought in your mind is toxic and will lead you to feeling sorry for yourself when the thoughts feel so good because that's the way you've been thinking all your life? And if somebody perchance actually comes up to you and says, you know, you're thinking screwy, you know what I mean? What do you do with that? Isn't that more? Isn't that sort of like you do the same thing with the alcohol? It says, mind your own flipping business. This is about booze, putting the plug in the jug. You know, now you're getting a little personal. You know what I'm talking about? You work your program, I'll work my program. Take your own inventory. We got 1,000 different myths in here that will allow you to feel like you're actually working a program and growing up, when all you're doing is standing still and treading water in the middle of the Gulf Stream with a baseball cap. And man, we encourage sickness. You know, you can stay exactly like a juvenile delinquent, like an angry 10-year-old. You get 10 years sobriety, we're going to give you that battalion anyway. And we're going to be nice, we're going to clap for you. It's a good thing, nothing wrong with it. We're going to give you the medallion and we're going to clap for you. And nobody's going to say, George, here's the medallion, we're so proud of you, but why don't you grow the heck up? You got 10 years, you know, you're 45 years old, stop chasing the skirts already. Leave the broads alone, you know what I'm talking about? Why don't you stop staring at your penis and start staring at God and doing what we do around here instead of looking at every girl that walks in the room? You know, we don't do that in here, do we? No, that's just something I do with my sponsees. And the only reason I get away with that with my sponsees is because they want to grow up. I don't know how that works. Somehow they get the opinion hanging around there. They say that, you know, they want what I have, they want what somebody has, or whatever it is. And they say, I'm tired of this crap. I'm willing to take the beating. I'm willing to go through the car wash. I just don't want this crap anymore. I'm just sick and tired of it. And somehow they make the connection that maybe that's the truth. Maybe people do drink again and have a miserable life because they don't grow up, because they're just not willing to surrender at all and give up all their old ideas because the result is nil, because they don't even see it. They don't even see it. They're operating like an automatic pilot. You know, here's the deal. They're sober, but they're thinking alky. they're like, I guess in NA they call it dope fiending. You know what I mean? They're just thinking alky. They're thinking the way they've always thought. Why me? Why is this happening to me? And all that sort of stuff. You know what I'm talking about? And our minds are so screwed up that we can rationalize ourselves into any corner, and we can tell ourselves rational lies. You know, and I suppose, and I guess my first sojourn into the truth, was when I actually wrote down the fourth step. And I didn't want to do that. Nobody wants to do that crap, you know what I mean? And then actually I had to sit down and with a sponsor and go over the fifth step. And even then, even when you do that stuff, it gives you some insight. But you know, we all understand that, you know, I did the fourth step when I was like 18 months sober. And believe me, I balked at it, I balked at it, I balked at it. This is the one, I think I told you about this. I told my sponsor, I'm doing everything in AA and it's crap, it's not working for me. And he's saying, well, you know, you're one of the rare ones. You know, I think I told this story last week. Then you're one of the rare ones. And I said, rare ones? He says, yeah, they tell it at every meeting, rare ones. He says, rarely have we seen a person fail as thoroughly fought our family. You've obviously done everything, and you know, it's not working for you, so you got to leave AA. He says, nah, yeah, don't tell me you're doing everything. You didn't even do your fourth step. I said, no, I guess I didn't, you know. So, you know, I did it, and it just, but you know, over a period of years, doing these inventories over years, you know, putting your problems before mean and cruel sponsors and old-timers who think nothing of just ripping your skin off and beating the crap over you with your, ripping your arm off and beating your head in with it, you know what I mean? So you finally have to somehow say, man, he's right. I am full of crap. He's right, I am doing that. And you got to go through years of, you know, of losing your credit cards to learn that, you know, there might be something wrong with the way you're spending money. Years of being fired a fourth or fifth time from a job. Years of getting involved in another relationship with an emotionally crazy woman or man or something like that. The same kind of deal, and saying, you know, instead of saying it's his fault, and go to me and saying, why am I always doing this? Why am I always think that my happiness lies in a romantic relationship? When the big book and everybody else has been telling me that's not where it's at. Why? When am I going to learn this lesson? And you find out that you're just as addicted. It's like Bill Wilson said, emotional sobriety is about unhealthy dependencies. And, you know, in my theological deal, it's about idolatry. You know, it's one of the Ten Commandments. It's about idolizing or worshiping something, you know what I mean, that's material, that's out there, that you set your whole life on, that you've got to have and build your life upon that, that's not God. And you always wind up disappointed because there's no human being, there's no nothing in the world that can give you what you really need. The alcohol didn't do it. The women aren't going to do it. The men aren't going to do it. The cars aren't going to do it. The business isn't going to do it. It's all going to wind up like crap. But somehow, some way, we just don't want to buy into that stuff. And we don't really want to hear anybody talking about that stuff because now you're getting personal. You know, now you're getting personal. When I was 24 or 5, I don't even know how old I was. I really don't, you know, I mean, it's... I don't, you know, I just don't remember. But I did get married the first time. And I married this gal, and which was probably a good thing back then, you know. And I had a son, and I had a nice house, you know, a nice job and everything like that. But you know something? You know, the marriage just wasn't working out. You know, she was... you know, she was, because we were growing in like in different directions. You understand what I'm saying? You know, I like to, you know, stay out at night with the guys in the bars, you know, and stuff like that. You know, not getting drunk. I never cheated on her. You know what I'm talking about? And I would invite her to join me in the bars. I'd say, Ryan, why don't you come on over and join me in the bars? And she would say things like this. I'll never forget one time she said to me, says, I don't want to hang out with those bums. These guys were my drinking buddies. They were the only people in the world that really understood me. They understood me more than she understood me. You know what I mean? And I was doing, you know, something. I was like extending myself. I really was, you know, when you think about it. Inviting a woman to meet your, like, drinking buddies. It was like sacrosanct, you know what I mean? And she would throw it back in my face. I want to sit with those bums. And, you know, she wanted me, like, to come home, eat dinner with the kid, you know, she would fix it. It was like, and it was always a hassle. But, you know, as a matter of fact, that's how my marriage ended. I didn't realize, that's the whole deal. She said, you come home drunk more time, I'm leaving you. I drove to life, I said, what the hell did she mean by that? You know? It was all about, and you know, because she, you see, here's the bottom line. He says, I was a nice guy, I was a good husband, I was a decent guy. And the bottom line is she was trying to change me. She knew I was a drinker before we got married, and you know, I didn't change. I was the same way after we got married, and she was trying to change me, and she didn't respect me, and we were different people drawn in different directions, and we probably shouldn't have gotten married in the first place, and we didn't belong together, and so I ultimately, we got a divorce. You know, because that's what happened. We got a divorce, you know, and I left her and the child, and I gave her child support, and that was it. And that's my story, and that's the truth. I got another story for you. That's a true story. I got another story for you. I married this beautiful gal. She was a sweetheart. She was really a beautiful gal. She wasn't drinking. She came from a wonderful family. And, you know, she wasn't like me. You know, I got married, and, you know, we had a good marriage. I mean, a lot of fun. We got the house, we got the car, we got everything, great in-laws, joined the country club and everything like that. But, you know, there was something about me where I was not satisfied. I was restless in the marriage. I just was restless. And so I never cheated on her, but I looked at every skirt that walked by with lust. Every skirt that walked by. And I'm in the back of my mind, I'm sure I'm saying, you know, if I only had this gal, if I only had that gal, because you know, no matter how good looking she was a good looking, wonderful gal. You want to know something? You know, after you know a few weeks or a few months, you know, it got old, and I needed like another scotch. I needed a different drink. I needed something different. And so what I would do is I would hang out with the bars with my friends, and I would drink until 3-4 o'clock in the morning. Looking at them and looking at the gals and flirting. And I never cheated on my wife, but you want something? I was cheating all the time, looking back on it, because I wasn't spending time with my wife. I was spending time with those other girls and those other guys, wishing I was with them. While she was alone with my 3-year-old son, waiting until 10 o'clock at night for me to come home for dinner. And then I'd come home at 3 o'clock in the morning drunk, and she'd get mad at me, and we'd have a fight. Because I thought she was trying to change me. But the truth of the matter is it says I wasn't a big enough man and I wasn't grown up enough to realize that I was the one who had the problem. Because she entered into the marriage thinking that it was a serious thing, a serious commitment. And she was prepared to love me no matter what. And to me, it was just another toy. It was just a new car, a different gal, a different thing. And now I was ready to move on. And I resented the fact. That she had me like trapped. I felt like I was trapped. And so what I did is as the marriage went downhill more and more because I was drinking, instead of pulling myself up by the reins, I continued to drink even worse. Now, I don't know whether I sort of coalesced this whole plan in my mind, but I know deep down inside I felt guilty for what I was doing. I didn't have the guts to say to her, I want a divorce. Because her parents were always so good to me. And she was always so kind to me. And she was always so decent. So I didn't have whatever the cojones it takes to go up to her and say, I want to leave, I want a divorce. So what I just did is I just tortured her with my drinking. Until I forced her to kick me out of the house so I could say, my wife kicked me out. And it wasn't my fault. And you know, I think, quite frankly, looking back on it, I bought into that. Because I'm my greatest fan. And that's what my mind told me, that I was a victim, that I was doing the right thing, and all that sort of stuff. I bought into that. But, you know, she still wanted to hang on to me, so she said, why don't we see a marriage counselor? And I didn't want to do that. I felt I was being pulled back in, you know, like the Godfather, and they pulled me back in, you know, and I was Al Pacino. And while I'm sitting with the marriage counselor, and he asks her, he says, so what are the 3 things you'd like to change about Russell? And she named 3 things, whatever the heck the 3 things were. I wasn't listening. And he said, what were the 3 things you'd like to change about Ronnie? And what I said was this. I said, I just want to date other women. Oh, now you don't love me anymore, huh? No, I'm not such a nice guy. You know why? Because I'm an alcoholic. And alcoholics do that. They rip people's hearts out and they say things like that and they're cruel. That's what I am. I'm an alcoholic. I mean, you're seeing me after 31 years. You didn't know me back then. You didn't have to live with me. Yeah. I just look at me and says, I want to date other women. Because, you know, I was going to nail this thing and throw this thing out. This thing wasn't going to, I wasn't going to get back, put my neck back into that trap. As a result of that, I got a, we were divorced. As a result of that divorce, there was an estrangement from my son. There was an estrangement from myself. There was all sorts of stuff. And I went around there in my bachelor pad, my chasing all sorts of stuff that got me in nothing but trouble. And things got worse and worse and worse. Two stories, you know? Two stories. And I promise you, I swear to God, I promise, two stories. One story, I was a hero. I was a victim. She didn't understand. And the other story, I was an immature, you know, irresponsible, self-centered child that hurt people. Two stories. And I promise you, that both stories are absolutely true. So how could that happen? I promise you, I swear to God, that for many, many years, the first story I told you was the truth for me. You couldn't have argued me out of that story. I wouldn't have said anything but that story. And when you believe that that's the truth, when you build your whole life upon that story as the truth, all sorts of interesting consequences happen from that story as to how you view yourself, how you view women, how you view your life, how you view relationships. And I'm going to tell you something. One of the things you find out with a story like that is you keep on getting the same relationships over and over again. You hurt the same people because you don't even see, you don't even see yourself. You don't see yourself. You know this spiritual axiom, whenever I'm disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with me. All you see is whenever I'm disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. Because you disturbed me. You shouldn't hurt my feelings. And I lived a whole life on that first story. And as a result of that, my life crashed and burned, and I hurt a lot of people, and I wound up in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a result of coming here, making God the center of my life, wanting to please Him and not chasing after skirts and stuff like that, even though, you know, the part that's my desire, it's there, it's all there, you know, spending, you know, being a drunk, you know, thinking alcoholically. But as a result of somehow this thing working over me over a period of time, I got a great gift. I got the gift of the second story. I got the gift of the second story. You know, when you live your life and you have the second story, all sorts of remarkable things happen. You understand yourself. You understand why you do the things you do. You know something? You can even sponsor people. A guy will come into my office. He'll tell me the first story. And I'll look at him and I say, that's not why you're getting divorced. What do you mean, that's not why I'm getting divorced? No, you're getting divorced because your whole life centers around your penis. And you can give a crap about your three-year-old son, you can give a crap about your wife, you know, you're a sex addict and you're a whack job. And you don't even, and you want to, you don't even give a crap about the girl that you're going to go to bed with, you just want to get laid. That's your deal. And they'll get mad at first, you know, at first. But unfortunately, if you have the capacity to be honest, once it's in there, you're screwed, and you got to ultimately come back and say, man, you're right. You got to recognize the truth. Now, everybody in here, and that's just one story, one small story about my life with my wife and my divorce. And I got a million stories. I got a million first stories about every relationship I had in my life that I thought was true and absolutely correct, that I based my life on. And if you came up to me and said, no, that's not the truth, I would have fought you to the death saying, you don't understand. Or I would have given you one of these things. Stay out of my life. It's none of your business. Take your own inventory. You know, that's a great line. Take your own inventory is a great line that alcoholics use to stay sick. You can use that line to stay sick because there's some sort of unwritten rule that says you need to take your own. You know, in the Oxford, the reason why we don't go to the, I don't know if you know this, the reason why alcoholics left the Oxford group is they had something called correction. In the Oxford group, you read about it. They had correction where somebody would come up and say, "My wife, this, my wife, whatever it is," and the group they had crosstalk, and the group would check them and correct them. And you know what the alcoholics did? He says, "We got to get out of here and form our own fellowship. This is too flippin' much, you know." Hey, you know what I'm talking about? You ever try to correct somebody and we don't have crosstalk in here? You know what I mean? You might hurt somebody's feelings, you know, if you tell them they're an idiot, you know, or something like that. But what does it say in the book? The way we get a new perspective, by 100 forms of humiliation, the final question of our self-sufficiency. So the great thing is, since we don't hurt ourselves in here, we get to be arrested and slammed out there. That's how we learn it, out there, because nobody has the guts to tell us about what's really going on in here. Unless you run into an old-timer who doesn't give a crap, and, you know, realize they can, they say things to hurt your feelings and stuff like that, you know, but there's not too many of them around anyway. And, you know, everybody in here, right now, has a story they're operating under. Do you understand that? You're all right now thinking about yourself, thinking about your life, thinking about everything that's happening, and you got a story. And if I sat down with you and I'd say, tell me about your life, tell me about your divorce, tell me about this and tell me about that, you would tell me a story. And you know something? It's a story that you're absolutely sure of and you'd buy into it. And your whole life and everything that's happened to you before and everything that's about to happen to you in the future really is a result and will be a result of what you believe the truth is, what you believe that story is. And I'm going to tell you something. If you keep on walking in the same direction, you're going to wind up where you're headed. Unless you change directions. You know? And what's the chances of you're changing directions on a story that you've bought into for 20, 30, 40 years? You know, especially when you keep on telling people, mind your own business. Take your own inventory. You know, and all of a sudden you wind up with 5 years sobriety, or 10 years sobriety, lost in space. Thumb sucking crybaby. Feeling sorry for yourself, not even understanding why I say you're just bad breaks and misunderstandings. You know, life's just not good for me. Because you've been operating under the same story you were operating around before you stopped drinking. Now, don't you want to know the true story? I'm not even saying I know the true story. Only God knows the true story. We see through a mirror darkly. Only God knows the true story. I'll find out the true story one of these days. But I'd like to think, I think I'm closer to the true story. And the reason I think I'm closer to the true story is because I've been rocking into the fourth dimension. You know what I mean? I've experienced it because it's working for me. And so, you know, this is about getting your story together. All this stuff is about getting your story together so you can live an honest, truthful life and not tell yourself all sorts of lies, rational lies, which is what God wants, and that's what clears up the relationship. That's why you have a strong relationship, because he doesn't want to really deal with liars. He doesn't want to deal with liars, you understand? And we're all liars. I'm a liar, we're all liars. You know, we're all saying I make this much money when we're really making that much money. You know what I mean? We're all lying. We don't even know why we're lying. We don't even think about it. Well, why, even when it helps us to do, even would it be better if we told the truth? You know, we're all hypocrites and do that sort of stuff. But how are you going to get that deal in Alcoholics Anonymous if you're holding on to your old ideas and you're fighting that deal and you don't realize that the real problem is in your brain? Who are you going to find to set you straight and to help you out with this deal? That's why sponsors are so important. You know, and I get these guys come up to me and they say, I got to get a new sponsor. He says, why? He says, you know, I don't like my sponsor. You know, I want to find somebody who's like my friend. No, I don't think so. Well, I mean, you know, listen, you know, the one thing I found out about my sponsors is even though they'd say things that hurt my feelings, I somehow knew deep down inside what they really did is they loved me. They loved me enough so they were willing to tell me the truth. You know, one day I'll tell you the story about Al Grau, probably next week on Step 5. So God bless you. Thank you very much.